Welcome, everybody. This is The Disposable Web. The Disposable Web is the sequel to the Social Business Hangout podcast series available on iTunes. The Disposable Web is a new series focusing on the evolution of the internet. In a nutshell, the internet of today is not the internet as old. So what we want to do is we're reaching out to people that are on our friend list that have a better understanding of the progress of the internet over the years. And it's my honor to introduce...
My name is Eric Gilbert. I'm co-founder of Motorsport.com, which is a leading motor racing website. Or should I say online media? Because whenever we say website, for me, it's a bit diminutive. But it's an online media on racing. We're one of the leading one out there. And I co-founded it in 1999. And we grew it, you know, over the years, we've grown it from 1999 to 2010 to one of the biggest one out there. At first, when we started in 1999, I mean, we didn't have any photo, no digital content per se. We only had text. So we added all, we added photos, we added videos. We got better at covering races, actually going to races until 2010. And at the end of 2010, we made the decision, all the partners, we were four partners back then, and we made the decision to sell it to a company based in Miami, a private equity based in Miami. Basically, the owner of the company decided to also hire me. He said, I didn't want to just buy a company. I also wanted to have your expertise as well. So I've been working with him for the past 5 years. So, you know, the past 5 years have been, they've been very, very exciting. We have so many projects now. It's unbelievable. Our goal is to be the absolute number one in racing. And this is a goal that we have actually for this year. And the competition is really, really, really hard. There's media out there like Autosport that have been there, I've been around for decades, but there's also huge media in different countries as well that are giving, you know, they're very, very fierce competitors. Our objective is really to pass them and be number one this year. So this is what I've been doing for the past 15 years. In a more general way, I've always been involved in racing in one way or another, whether as a, race car driver, a race car driver manager as well in the media. Basically, for the past 30 years, I've been involved in racing. It's pretty much my life. So this is where you'll find me.
To your point, it is a mixed media world now. It's not just a website. You have your social media, you have your YouTube channel. There's so many layers there. So you've seen that evolution over the course of 15 plus years. But you also have, obviously, as you said, a passion of the motorsport industry. And that industry as well has seen a massive change in the last 15 years, both in terms of how sponsorships work, funding, the cost of doing business, the entry point, the cost of the entry point. And you yourself are quite the photographer as well. You've won some awards, some recent awards as well, and I'd love to talk to you about that as well. But what I'd like to do is maybe go back to 1999 briefly, because one of the things that I quite often am struggling with when I talk to clients is, you know, they think they could just put up a WordPress site and all of a sudden, you know, they're going to be number one and they're going to get all this wonderful income. And I keep telling them, it's like, you know, back in 99, let's say, there was 41 websites maybe on the planet, and if you were the 42nd, you'd have a pretty good chance of being number one or have people stumble across your site. But we're talking, you know, a gazillion websites, and in your industry specifically, anybody with a WordPress site can call themselves a motorsports blogger and, you know, potentially compete. But to your point, it's a considerably different world, and you yourself right now are in the Ukraine right now working with your Ukrainian developers to, you know, build a very complicated platform. So maybe if you could tell me about your views of what, you know, the website world or the internet world was in 99 and how you've seen the progress over the last 15 years.
The progress, there's been, obviously, this is a very, very broad question. It's certainly not the same game for sure in 1999. Like you mentioned, in 1999, there were fewer websites. Then again, even the website that did exist back then, could they be considered as actual media with actual traffic, especially in the sports business and racing? I mean, I'm in racing. I cannot talk on behalf of everything, but in terms of racing and sports media, there was quite a few back then. And of course, it kind of exploded in the early 2000s. But also, on the other end, since 2008, 2009, 2010, it's very difficult to pinpoint a year, but I think there's been a lot of also other, you know, there's a many websites I actually follow as well, and I think those that you find now are, you know, the very best. I think those that have made it are you know, basically are the very best. But the biggest change, basically, as far as I'm concerned, has been social media. For me, that has been the most, by far the biggest change. It's not even competition. I mean, competitors come, competitors go. I mean, in racing, you always have, like, in 15 years, how many racing websites I've seen coming? And first thing you know, the year after, they were not around anymore. Like you mentioned, sometimes, where's the limit between a WordPress blog and an actual media? I mean, the limit sometimes is quite thin, and it's very difficult to define what exactly make a website an actual media. Back to what I just said, I think the biggest change is definitely been on social media and the impact of social media. The big competition nowadays is not even our direct competitor, but it's social media platforms, because everything is there. Sometimes you learn things on social media platforms before you actually know it on an actual media.
I remember when there was the big accident in Daytona where Juan Pablo took out not the fire truck, but the cleaning truck, and Brad took a picture of it, and all of a sudden his Twitter account just exploded. Here's a scenario where it's not even a professional photographer that got the picture. It was the driver in his car with his iPhone, and all of a sudden the conversation exploded with the driver still in the car. So to your point, you're not just competing with the fans in the crowd taking a video and pictures and doing updates or even following a hashtag, everybody is in it. So as a choice destination, to your point, back in, let's say, 99, if I wanted to know anything about a particular race, to your point, I would either be on routers, I would either wait for the news, I might have a website with someone that is a phone call away that called you in to tell you what the update was. But now you're getting real-time feeds from hundreds and right, if not thousands of people following the same instance. So to your point, do I even need a website if I have a hashtag?
Well, if you have a hashtag or a handle, I mean, it's just a hashtag and a handle. You're not a media, right?
What I meant by that is more, you know, I could be following a hashtag and getting a flurry of content. Right?
Yeah, you can. But is it quality content? There's going to be a lot of noise. That's the thing. At the end of the day, the role of a media is to filter the noise and the actual information. I think for us, that part is not that bad because we've played with it pretty well. I mean, motorsport.com is very active on social media platform.
You are amazing on social media.
Yeah. So we really integrated it into our editorial process. Our editors, our writers, our photographers, whoever contribute and have access to our CMS, part of their job, part of their process is actually to promote whatever they put on Facebook or on Twitter. So that's, that's really part of our editorial process, because we know that, I think the big difference is the fact that most people nowadays, like I would say from the numbers we have, close to 70% of our viewers come not from organic visitors, like come directly to our site. They come from social media links and from search engine links. This is basically where they come from. So we have to be good in those two fields. A little bit of referral as well, like referring site, but social media is more than 40%, 40-45% of our visit come from social media, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Reddit. Reddit is pretty big as well.
Reddit is spectacular. And you bring up a really good point, because one of the things that I think has really evolved in the internet is the concept of what is your homepage. In the old days, the homepage or the landing page was pretty clear. But now, as you say, every single link that's out there is now become your homepage, your point of entry. You know, the amount of people, as you say, that come on to the .com versus, you know, the subdomains or the subdirectories has probably shifted dramatically in your statistics over the years.
Indeed, and that's also one reason why we Last year, when we redesigned the new site, the new platform, we went for a responsive layout, for a responsive design layout. We have an application, but having a responsive design layout is super important because when people find you on Facebook on their iPhone or on their smartphone, the link that they click on doesn't go to the app. It goes to your website. So having a responsive site, when they click in their iPhone and they see you on Facebook on their iPhone and they click, they see some news or something that just happened, they click on it and then they end up in your platform. It's important that experience that they're going to have is very, very good. So if you have a site that's not responsive, then it's a problem. Ever since we went for a responsive design layout, our mobile viewers have grown like so much. Now it's 65%. 65% of our visit comes from a mobile device, whether a smartphone or a tablet. So that's staggering.
How is that affected? Because one of the key aspects of a site such as yours, obviously, is, you know, the site is fundamentally sponsored from, you know, with advertiser and call to actions and so forth. Has that impacted your use of mobile? Because obviously your screen has changed. So, you know, how a banner or a sidebar ad might play out on a mobile device. Have you addressed the sponsor side of that equation?
Of course. It's always a work in progress as well. You have to change your ads. I mean, you cannot have a sophisticated skin type of advertising on a mobile because the screen is too small, but you can have some kind of 10 seconds screen takeover or something like that. So you kind of have to adapt. You have to adapt your advertising units for sure. So that's very important because for us, it's our, you know, advertising is basically 90% of our revenues. So obviously, although we are branching out into different, you know, different other types of revenue streams, but it's still 90%. 90% of our revenue still come from advertising. So it's very, very critical that we get this one down pretty well. Otherwise, we don't have a business.
And to your point, you know, the one aspect that has really not changed much in media in general, it's a collection point for eyeballs. And if you can prove that there's, you know, like you're into the multi-millions of views, if you can prove to an advertiser that they're going to get that much product placement in front of those eyeballs, you know, that's your primary selling point. So to your point, if the ads are now no longer a skin or something like that, are you now potentially looking at a scenario where people are targeting specific ads on specific posts?
I'm not sure I understand your question quite well, but
let me rephrase it quickly. So as we were saying earlier, your homepage has now shifted to a point where your CMS and all the entries in your CMS are very much entry points to your website. There's definitely an opportunity, I think, where, you know, an advertiser might be interested in a very specific ad on a subsection of the site, but also potentially on a post specific. Have you looked at what the impact is on that distributed content in terms of the advertising?
There are several answers to your question because that's a multi-level type of question. So yeah, that's many questions in one. So of course, there's multiple entry points on motorsport.com, but that's one reason why our new platform is quite uniform. I mean, you go to motorsport.com and it's basically three or four layers. It's your homepage, your category homepage, your series homepage, browse page, and then content page. So there's four or five layers, and they're all pretty uniform. So the homepage for Formula One, for instance, is very much similar to the overall homepage, and even a content page kind of have the same type of, can support all those advertising units that you have, that you can find on the homepage. So that part, I don't think that part is a big problem. Now the second level of your question. Obviously, advertiser nowadays, like, yeah, you can have banner ads, but we do. And, you know, we have all the IAB standard, you know, ads on motorsport.com. But advertisers are definitely looking for something more now. They're looking for branded content. They're really looking for more sophisticated opportunities, I think, than just a banner. Because at the end of the day, a banner click-through rate is not that high. I mean, if you go for banners only, you're really going for numbers only. But if you do branded content, then you're going for quality as well. And when I say branded content, is that the name of your sponsor has to be communicated in a positive way, obviously. That's the name of the advertising game at the end of the day. But there also has to have some kind of editorial credibility as well. We cannot just, you know, be rosy about one specific sponsor. And so you have to do brand association, but a brand association with your content that's going to be fairly sophisticated, not just first degree, but that's going to be a little bit more sophisticated than just, you know, claiming that, for instance, you have an article on Porsche and the only thing you see in the article that Porsche is the best car around. I mean, it's not going to work that much. And advertisers, they know about it, and advertising agencies as well. People are, you know, a little bit more sophisticated these days. So, but branded content is definitely where the advertising is shifting its budget, I think.
And I would tend to agree, especially, and I see it a lot on more the video side of the equation, where you're now dealing with content partnerships where, as you say, let's say Porsche as an example, might create a specific series or series of advertorials, for lack of a better term, in video format on your channel, as opposed to putting maybe on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so it's almost become, you know, that you're not just doing an ad placement, you're using it as an opportunity to partner with a media organization. To, well, it's kind of like if you were to look at it as a TV channel, you know, the 3 o'clock half hour time slot is created by a third party organization purely as an ad, but it's in flow to the rest of the story, right?
Yes, you always, I mean, branded content opportunities, you always have to be careful when you develop them, but there are great opportunities there, and also the advertising budget nowadays online is definitely moving towards video ads as well. I mean, not video ads, but I mean ads with videos. So video content online is more and more, you know, now it's more and more the golden era for this as well. Because let's face it, I mean, less and less people, younger generation, I know some young people, they don't even have cable at home. They all get stream video. Their TV station is YouTube. It's not ABC, CBS, whatever. I mean, it's really YouTube, and it's really Dailymotion, and it's really those video platform. So this is now, and I almost sound cliche when I say it, but this is it. I mean, this is now the big thing now online. So that's why motorsport.com, we're making a lot of effort these days to have more video content. We're going to launch our Motorsport TV section pretty soon on motorsport.com. And I want, you know, once I have a few projects out of the way by April, May, I'm going to work on a video platform, an application that you would have a lot of, a huge amount of video content for racing. So this is my next big project. But obviously video this is the place to be for good high-level advertising dollars. This is why we have to do it these days. Not just the content, but because the money is there. Because you have to remember, all the big advertisers, they still don't pay. In terms of CPM, the money they pay for magazine is important. It's interesting, but it's certainly not the money in terms of CPM of what they're paying for television. So they're used to huge CPM dollars for TV. So for them, when you have some video content, now that it's online, I mean, I think that transition period from 2007, 2008 to now, that transition period that all the producers and the TV right holders were like, yeah, but our video is for TV. It's not for an online platform. I think that was a transition. And now I think people have come to grip with the fact that the place you have to be, the place where you have to distribute your video content now is online. It's certainly not cable TV. So, and now slowly but surely the advertising dollars is following that as well.
And I think to your point, if we were to break it up, you know, in the pre-99, it was basically the evolution of, let's call it journalism, for lack of a better term, which was predominantly writing of articles and whatnot. And then after 99 is really where the internet really broke into the picture model, if you right. You know, for lack of a better statement. And around 2010, as you say, it became pure video. And I think a lot of that was a direct result of the bandwidth as well as the mobile accessibility. But I think specifically in motorsports, we're seeing more and more series disappear from the TV in the first place. And as you say, not only are there less and less people on cable, there's less and less racing content on cable as well. So there's that desire for racing has really not diminished. So people have been forcing, you know, like I said, you got series doing complete live streams now, right?
Yes. Oh, they have no choice. I mean, ever since Speed got off the air and Fox Sports 1 was supposed to be the de facto racing channel, ever since that time, I mean, racing series have been at least low. Racing series other than NASCAR have been forced to find something else, really, if they want to get the word out there. I don't think on TV they'll find it. It really has to be street. You know, again, I'm almost afraid to sound cliche here. I mean, some people might hear me and say, yeah, of course. But obviously, I'm sorry in advance for those people, but I'll repeat it again. But in 4 or 5 years' time, racing is all going to be online, really. People, it's going to be very, very targeted, and all those series are going to be online. Even Formula One. Of course, you know, when you have multi-million or multi, you know, even billion-dollar TV contract worldwide, it's always, you don't want to change your model. So for a series like F1, I understand them not wanting to change the way things are at the moment. But one day they're going to hit a brick wall and they're going to realize why our worldwide TV right holders are not ready. They don't want to pay us, a large amount of monies anymore. Well, the problem is that the audience is not going to be there anymore. So they're going to have to find a different way to distribute their images, their show, basically. But I think, you know, smaller series have realized it. You see things in Europe that are being made that are pretty cool the way they do it. But some bigger series, you know, of course, they're so big that they may not care now, but at some point they'll have no choice. They'll have no choice but to care. When most of people won't watch broadcast TV anymore, that's going to be a problem for them.
I kind of saw that as well when the internet came along. Sometimes it was the smaller providers or the smaller companies, especially social media. You know, you had all these big organizations that were slow to convert to social media, and it was all the smaller organizations because they saw the opportunity. But I think at the same time, they had the opportunity to make that transition because they didn't have all those big contracts and the established mindsets and whatnot.
They have nothing to lose. They have nothing to lose. At other some series, don't forget that some series actually were actually paying to be on TV.
Yes.
Like Champ Car, typically Champ Car, but I think other series, I don't want to mention too many names because maybe I'll say something that's not quite true. I'll hurt some feelings, but I do remember Champ Car is among other things we're actually paying for it to get airtime. So, you know, those series, obviously they had no choice but to figure a better model than this because you cannot support a racing series forever with this type of model. So by always paying.
Well, you also have the reality of the world where, you know, the days of someone waking up at 4 a.m. in the morning to watch a race halfway around the world, we now live in a world where most of your content is digested when you feel like digesting it. So as long as you're able to avoid the spoilers of who won the race, there's nothing stopping you from watching that stream 5 hours after the fact, right?
I would say yes, but it's funny that you should mention this because sometimes at motorsport.com, we're so good in doing our job that people always tell us that you guys are spoiling it because you're saying that you're telling the news too soon. And I think there's still a sense of people still want to watch live things. There's still, you can still see the masses. They enjoy watching something live because it's happening now. And I think one factor today that makes people want to watch things live is the fear of missing out, you know, the fear of something happening and they were not, you know, watching it. So I think that part, yes. I mean, my ideal model for video would definitely be a model that you can watch a live stream with instant replay the way you want to do it, but also archive it and maybe have a 5-10 minute edit also of the race or the sport event. I think that would be my ideal model. So you kind of reach out to, you know, whoever is your audience. I mean, some people will want to watch it live. Some others have no time or they're not around or they will watch if something happened, they'll watch it. And then you want to have also that quick, that short edit also of people who have no time sitting through a 2-3 hour race, and they just want to see the big wreck and the big and the checkered flag.
As you say, if I've got an hour to spend on entertainment, am I going to spend that hour watching one race where, let's be honest, with the exception of the last 10 laps, it might just be a follow the leader? Or do I want to basically do a trip around the world and catch 10 different series over the course of an hour because I've got it in, small blocks, right?
Yes. I mean, I guess you have to find, you got to find people for everything, I guess. You got to find an audience for all those things. But the important thing is have a product that will answer their needs, basically. But that being said, I at the moment, we're at motorsport.com, we do support videos, but we're going to launch Motorsport TV soon. And one of the first TV show, we're going to have a very interesting TV show. I say TV show, but loosely, because it's not on TV, but it's going to be online. But we're going to have a 30-minute feature show with every Formula One race. And it's going to be pretty much exclusive. In many parts of the world, it's going to be exclusive on motorsport.com. So we're going to do this year. So, we're getting there. Even faster than I thought myself. So we're getting there. And by the end of the year, we're going to have a couple of our own video programs on motorsport.com, on Motorsport TV. So,
as you say, you are a media company. The website is just one aspect of it. One of the things that I'm intrigued about, because, I'm on your Facebook feed, so I'm constantly seeing you travel and whatnot, and you go all over the world. Your views on the internet at different places in the world, because, in North America, we have one understanding of what the internet is. In Europe, there would be another one. And you get to a place like China, and it's a completely different world. You're, as a world traveler, what's your impression of, the various stages of the internet?
Well, those places I go to, I must say, it's pretty similar. It's pretty uniform, really. The brands may change. The social media platform may change. The speed may be different. But people are people at the end of the day, and I think they interact with the different online platforms in fairly similar ways from one country to the other. Really, here there's actually, I don't want to disappoint you, there's almost no story. I mean, it's pretty similar. The way people will, use social media in America or use social media like here in Ukraine is very, very similar. It's just that here they have a different social media. They're going to have VK. VK is like the Facebook of Russia and Ukraine. So they may have different platforms, but the way they'll use it is fairly similar. Here for me, I don't notice any huge difference. Some markets are surprisingly just a little bit behind the curve. I mean, some markets are always a little bit more conservative. So in terms of content, they will still go to their racing platform of choice, even before going to Facebook. And later in the day, they'll go to Facebook. In some markets, you'll find this. And those countries are surprisingly not necessarily small economies. Sometimes you see big, very important countries, like the market act this way. It's slightly different than the United States, but they're very, very small differences. I mean, in America, basically, people, like I said earlier, 40-45% of our sessions come from social media. So that means there's almost half of the people who come to motorsport.com that they were on Facebook before or on Twitter before. They didn't come to motorsport.com first. They actually went to their social media feed. We sent them something, they saw the news, and then they come to motorsport.com. So that's the major difference than, let's say, 10 years ago or 8 years ago. They would come to motorsport.com first. That was their first thing in the day, or at least for racing content, that's the first thing they would do. They would go to motorsport.com, they would go to Autosport, they would go to, all our other competitors, and that's it. There was no social media. But nowadays, people just read their social media feed, so you have to be there.
One of the things that it always impresses me by your feed is you put up that what's currently on my desktop wallpaper. So I know you're big on visual. Your thoughts on how visual content has assisted, if you will, with that conversion from, let's say, a Facebook to the website. Is there an art to the image to help with the conversion, or is it just the link?
Well, now you're almost bringing up the photographer in me, but online,
and that was kind of the point. Yes,
image is definitely everything online. There's no doubt about it. I mean, if you post something, I mean, I have like scientific proof, literally. But if you post something with no picture and nothing like sexy, it's not going to work. I mean, you have to put something that's really relevant to what you're saying, that's catchy, that has nice visual colors, that's saturated. I mean, it is everything. I mean, people, I don't remember the actual amount, but the number of visual stimuli that everyone has, you know, everyone see in a day, in a single day, is staggering. It's like in the hundreds of thousands, basically. So to be noticed, to get noticed in that massive amount of visual information, you really have to do something better and different and have image that's, you know, that's going to be more relevant and better looking than your competitor. So, and motorsport.com, I think just in terms of photography, we have 1.7 million photos online on motorsport.com, and it's all database. So you can search by driver, by event, by team, by photographer. I mean, there's no limit on the way you can search those photos. You can view them by most popular, most trending, you know, by year, there's no limit. Everything is database. So there's many different ways you can look at view photo galleries on motorsport.com. And we have 1.7 million photos. So it's a commitment of 15 years that we've had to have the best visual content on motorsport.com. And if you look at any article, every article has like a whole, they come with a film strip on the left hand side, and you're going to see a lot of photo there, all relevant to the information. So for us, it's not only a support to text content, but it's also a media in itself. It's also a content on its own as well. So it's always been very, very important on motorsport.com to have that. And it's even more important nowadays with social media, with the, you know, how important social media is.
One of the things that I've noticed in the newspaper industry specifically is, you know, there was a time where you would have the professional photographer, and then you would have the actual reporter, and you would have the person that does the layout, you know, and you'd have all these disconnected roles. And now it's become almost a point where the journalist has to be that mixed media person. They're in charge of their own layout. They're in charge of their own text. They have to take their own picture, and in some cases have to do their own video. So the content creator in that world has had to take on so many tasks. Is there something to be said about, like I said, I see your photos, and for the most part, I can tell if it's a photo you took because you have your style. Is there something to be said about still having a separate group of people for the different pieces of content, or is it really just, you know, one person has to pull it all together now?
Well, one person putting it up together, I think it's very rare that someone can excel everything in photo and video. And even if they do, like on the technical side of it, they'll miss out on things. I mean, you cannot do everything. If you go to a race weekend, you're on a race weekend and you try to shoot the start and interview some guy in the pit, I mean, it doesn't work. I mean, at some point you have to, technically it's possible, it's feasible. And I know people are very talented in everything, but in terms of workload and timing, it just doesn't work that much. But of course you have far less people for the same media. You can, online, you can allow yourself to have maybe a team of four or five people when a couple of years ago, 20, 30 years ago, they had like 10, 15 people working on some event coverage. Of course, everything is digital. So our process, I mean, we've streamlined our process to the extreme. I mean, doing the layout of an article in motorsport.com is very, very simple, really. There's really nothing to it. You don't need a professional, you know, graphic designer to do it. I mean, our templates are super easy to use. And, you know, all our writers can do it, really. It's always good to have an actual editor editing stories, because sometimes some factual things will have to be checked. And so you have to have that editorial, you have to integrate this to your editorial process. But technically speaking, it's really not a problem doing so many things at the same time. It's just a logistical and timing limitation that you're going to face. So, but of course, that has changed a lot. I mean, nowadays, also in terms of photography, you have digital cameras. Since the early 2000s, we've worked with digital cameras. Obviously, 20 years ago, in the 1980s, 1990s, a professional photographer would go to an event, but really, he was working for a newspaper or a magazine. So the only thing they really needed from that person was just a couple of shots, 5-6 shots, that's it. So if you can have any photo of the winner celebrating, any photo of his car at the start, you're done. You're good to go. Now, when a photographer at motorsport.com covers an event, we have thousands of photos every Grand Prix. Same thing for even smaller series. Or Le Mans, for instance, we're going to have 2,000-3,000 photos. Those photos are not just there to have photos, to have a photo database, but they're also there to support any type of article we're going to have in the next coming month. So it's also important to have this also in our database, like the enough photography to cover everything. And there's no photo editor anymore. You're your own photo editor. But obviously, the digital cameras have made the process much faster than before. But the level of production is much higher as well. It's not 4 or 5 photos anymore. It's hundreds of photos that you need to, and they all need to be pretty good. I mean, if you have something that's, you know, that's not so much, that doesn't look so good, you know, people will notice it, basically. The standard now is much higher than before.
And to your point, there's so much quantity out there, as you say. Those with an eye for quality will constantly come back expecting that same level of quality on every visit, right? So as you say, it spans multiple series, it spans multiple content providers, and it spans the globe. And as an operational layer, to be able to ensure that consistency is what makes you number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.